Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. Nano Vila joining us in the studio.
Yes.
Ben Mankiewicz still here, but now who's driving this bus?
Yeah, now this bus is going to make it stops on time. It's cruising along.
Yeah.
Not going to stop where it's not supposed to.
It might stop. It might come to a screeching halt. It did, I think, when we came back, because I didn't ask who was bringing us back from that. I have some reads to give you, as they're called in the business. Anna Kasparian, where is she? I'm sure you're dying to know. She is participating in a politics and digital media roundtable tomorrow, Wednesday, November 29th, with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Wow.
That's very exciting. Yeah, and you can watch on Facebook Live on Senator Bernie Sanders' Facebook page at 4:45 p.m. Eastern Time or 1:45 p.m. Pacific Time.
And we know Dina Tukruri from AJ Plus. We like her.
Yes, we do.
Do we? I don't know who that is.
I don't know what you're implying.
She was on our air like during the convention, so I did like a couple of shows with her.
I used to work in the building where AJ Plus is now.
So you're basically best friends.
Wildly jealous. Yeah. That's right. It was an awesome building. It's like in San Francisco by the water. Not to say anything about where we're currently located, but it's much, much worse. And then finally.
Also, real quick, I just mentioned about Bernie Sanders. Interesting story from Politico yesterday. Suggesting that the Bernie Sanders, while the head of essentially outreach, that's the job that Chuck Schumer gave him. But what Sanders is doing is putting together a presidential team.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. And he's also hired a couple of people, much more. He's making peace with unions. He's very involved with Randy Weingarten from the teachers union. And he's hired these foreign policy guys to sort of shore up what was obviously a weak point in 2016. On foreign policy, but mostly just taking the tactic of connecting in many ways with some of the party establishment types that he kept very much at arm's length and kept him very much at arm's length in 2016. As polls indicate, he is the most popular non-Democrat among Democrats. but it's a suggestion that to me that like his lack of formally joining the party is merely tactical.
Yeah.
He has for all intents and purposes.
It's
his strength in the eyes of the voters. But he is, for all intents and purposes, a Democrat who is being able to say, hey, man, I'm not a Democrat.
Right.
He's doing everything that a guy who is going to run for president in 2020 it would normally do.
There are people who didn't vote for the Democrat this time around who voted for a Democrat before because they do what they want to do, what's most in line with what they feel like doing. And I get that from Bernie Sanders. He's like, I believe the same thing throughout. And that's what's so refreshing is like, oh, I just ran what you asked me through what I believe, and I am giving you the answer now.
Right.
All right, another similar to Bernie Sanders. Shop TYT 10 days of Black Friday sale. Tuesday, 11/28, Giving Tuesday. That's what we're calling it. 10% of all proceeds will be donated to the Committee to Protect Journalists.
I like that. I do like the FDR T-shirt.
Yeah,
yeah.
The CPJ is a great organization. They do.
Yeah.
They do a lot of great work.
I love. See, that's how I know you know about it. Is that you know that you can just call
CPJ.
It the CPJ.
Joel Simon, you're my bud.
You're much closer to it than I, because I'm like I couldn't even read all those words together.
Yeah, they have a very fancy gala every year in New York. You should get invited sometime.
Really?
Yeah, that's when you know you've really made it.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never been to a gala. I don't
ever
think.
In your life.
Never. All right, let's see what we've got here.
Been invited. What about a gala?
A gala?
I've had a gala apple. The same. I got invited to that by Whole Foods. All right. member shout outs today. Charles Collins and Susan Arnett. Thank you so much. It's made possible by viewers like you, etc. And then, I don't know what else. Oh, live tweets. Tristan Rosella wrote, at this rate, in 20 years, the top 1% will have 100% of the money in America, but the US dollar will be worth nothing compared to the yuan and ruble. Renminbi and ruble. 100% of $0 is still $0. And the unstable Canadian rights, the return of Brett's sweater. You're damn right. I'm on both hours today, so I had to dress accordingly with the uniform that came back from, my car where I left it for however many months it's been since I've worn it. Let's get into this story, for time is a-wastin'. All right, Republicans don't think that they have a sexual harassment problem. That they also think that Democrats do. There is a new poll out, a survey from HuffPost and YouGov, and it says it finds that 76% of Republicans and Republican leaners think Democrats have a very or somewhat serious problem with sexual harassment. But just 40% of Republicans think that sexual harassment is a very or somewhat serious problem for their own party. While a slightly higher percentage, 43% of Republicans, thinks it is not an issue with their own party. A majority of Democrats, 60%, think their own party has a sexual harassment problem, while 75% of Democrats think sexual harassment is a very or somewhat serious problem with the GOP. What does this mean?
Well, I mean, this poll was really interesting, actually, if you look through it, because, I mean, you know, you look at those top line numbers that you read, and it obviously seems to indicate that there's a sort of a lot of hypocrisy within the Republican base and not as much during with the Democrat base. But if you look into the brass tacks, look through the numbers, there's some interesting figures. It said that in that same poll, it said that, for example, 77% of Democrats still support Bill Clinton, despite the fact that 68% of them believe that he probably or definitely committed sexual assault.
What does that mean to
you? That means that politics is all tribal these days. It's like it's all tribalism. There's very little principle. Like no one stands on anything. They just kind of like, you know, we've sort of self-sorted within different camps, and we kind of just support camp we're in. And you know.
I think that's while true, simplistic, because I don't think, nor do I think he should, that Bill Clinton could survive that now. So it is a little different to look back.
Well, Al Franken's surviving it, right?
Well, Al Franken has survived, but again,
and John Conyers.
Let's not pretend that what Bill Clinton was accused of is any way similar to what Al Franken's been accused of. They're in different galaxies. But so, and we don't know if Al Franken's going to survive it. I bet he doesn't. I bet he quits. But I don't know. We'll find out. But it is more difficult in human nature to go back and assign blame after the fact. Bill Clinton gets accused of what he was accused of now. I don't think he would survive it. Although it is worth pointing out that unlike every other charge against both people on the right and the left, that was funded, which mm-hmm. did draw into question legitimately it felt at the time the veracity of some of the accusers. But I still don't think that he would survive it now.
Do you think he speaks to the DNC in 2020? I mean.
Yes,
I think he probably does.
I think he probably does. As a former president, it probably trumps that. It would be bold to deny him. And you know, there is another living president. There's two, in fact. I mean, hopefully Jimmy Carter will still be around in 2020. But you know, you don't.
He's going to bring the house down,
Jimmy Carter.
So that would be interesting because that's a different. And you can obviously have his, Hillary could speak as well. I just think it's definitely factors into it. But as you know, a number of Democrats, at least publicly, have come out, written about, and spoken that they would reevaluate what Bill Clinton was accused of in light of the current climate and in light of how we now treat sexual harassment claims.
And the ones who came out strongest are running for president.
Yeah.
So this is when you talk about polls, this is a complicated question to learn something from. Because I think there's the psychology of taking a poll where everyone's got their guns up. They know, and it's like, this is my chance to communicate something about myself and about someone's going to learn about the country from this. And I'm one of the 300 or, you know, 1200 people that they're asking. And it's more simple to ask, who are you voting for? And we can learn from that. What we can do is try to find like controls and things to balance against each other. And in this one, they ask the same question to Democrats and Republicans. And it seems like the Democrats are more self-aware of a problem and more likely to admit that there is something wrong.
I guess my point is that they're in general they admit that there's a problem, but when it comes to like individuals, because they also the poll also showed that they still support Al Franken, even though they disagree with what he did and stuff. Like it's just like when it becomes different. It's like whenever
are you going to do something about it?
Whenever there's a poll about like a candidate running against a generic Republican that the generic person always wins because you can't.
You're not running against it. That is one thing that is many, all the Bernie supporters, and I was a Bernie supporter as well, here never quite got. Like they didn't, there was never a campaign run against Bernie Sanders. The campaign would have been effective. He might have won. We'll never know. But there would have been a campaign against him instead of the campaign against Hillary. And then there would have been very specific things said about Bernie that kept it, none of that landed because there was no campaign. Always when you say perfect. It's essentially like saying you want this corrupt person or a perfect candidate.
Right. You're projecting all the
best things about
it. Yeah, and the difference between those two things, it is like saying, poll one, do you want 1,000 pounds of candy? Yes. Poll two, do you want a stomach ache? No. Okay, sure. There you go.
You know, like, yeah, it's easier to say, like, yeah, the Democrats have a sexual harassment problem. But then when you start to break, like, okay, then, okay, what about this person? What about that person?
I object to the nature of the question. It's interesting, and I don't mean it shouldn't even be asked, but then, like, the notion that a sexual harassment problem would exist inside of a political party is of no more value than saying, do coffee drinkers have a sexual harassment problem?
Sure.
Of course they do. Men have a sexual harassment problem. A few women, but overwhelmingly men, have a sexual harassment problem. And I imagine half of them are Democrats.
Yes,
half
yeah,
of them about, are,
yeah.
Many of them are independents. Sure, you know, there's some libertarians also. That does not mark whether you have a sexual harassment problem or not. That only tells you that there may be some, that you may be able to use the hypocrisy argument more aggressively against one party rather than the other. But hypocrisy arguments
almost never work.
And also,
I did say something different last time.
I'm not interested in hypocrisy. Like, I don't really, I mean, there's very rarely there's an argument about, first of all, I think hypocrisy tends to make people interesting. Right. Now, it depends on what the hypocrisy is. If your hypocrisy is gay people are sinners and they should go to hell or prison, and then it turns out you're gay, well, that's an interesting hypocrisy that I think we should point out. If your hypocrisy is, I said this then and now I've largely changed my mind, or I didn't realize I'd be in this situation, sorry. I'm not interested. That doesn't matter. I care about, you know, if, for politicians, what have you done? What are you going to do? Not so much do we catch you in a little moment of hypocrisy.
I think it's the most important thing when you're looking at politicians is even beyond the individual is just like which power sectors in the society do they owe power to?
That's right.
You know, and that always ends up being what they end up doing in office.
That's right.
Anyway.
And a point that I you know, this is an argument I have with Cenk a lot, like, or at least a thing that I focus on and maybe overly, but like in addition to who do they owe allegiance to, right? Who do they owe power to? And then who is sitting at their table, like who gets to sit at their table? Because that's almost sometimes a more powerful way, or at least a more positive way of putting it. Like, I mean, as you make policy, as you go forward, are there union people there? Is there somebody from the Consumer Financial Protection Board there? Are those people involved in a process of setting policy? That matters. That matters almost as you know, as Elizabeth Warren said, and many others have said as well, that personnel is policy. Who's sitting down with Donald Trump when he makes these decisions? And the answer for Trump is no one we like.
No.
No one in any circumstance.
The worst people in America.
The worst people in America are sitting there doing it. That's so.
Al Franken, you think he's going to make it through? What do you think? What do you think should happen?
I think he should resign. I mean, especially the stakes are so low. I mean, because they have a Democratic governor, they would just replace him with another Democrat. And so they're not going to lose a vote in the Senate. Like, the stuff, they stand to gain a lot more. First of all, if they're going to stand on any sort of principle, they should probably just, you know. And the thing is, it's not like they're throwing the balance of the Senate off or anything like that. Like, the stakes are just way lower.
It is. Yeah, I largely agree with you.
What if I like Al Franken's comedy?
It is.
Like, we can get into like a philosophical debate. Can you separate the art from the man?
Right.
But are you allowed to like a Woody Allen movie?
It will give us the moral high ground.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I already think we have it. It's frustrating Al Franken will resign, and then Roy Moore will get elected to the Senate. There won't be an investigation. They won't not seat him. They'll seat him, and he'll be a United States Senator. And then in 3 years, he'll win again, this time with the proper Alabama Republican figure of 72% of the vote.
Right. And if Doug Jones wins, he'll, you know, live out the remainder of the term.
It's 3 years. It's 3 years. It's not nothing. Yeah. He'll be there until January of 2021, so it's not nothing. But yeah.
And then he'll go back to business as usual.
Although you never know. You know, maybe he's able to sort of establish himself as a good old boy who's liked. Who knows? Unlikely. I suspect that Doug Jones. But my hunch is that
the treasurer of Alabama is a Democrat.
It is just frustrating in a sense that if Al Franken, and I got it, he should probably resign. But his sins on the list of people,
they don't compare.
His sins don't compare to, you know, he's at the low end of a spectrum. But we're not allowed to have a spectrum, because as soon as you have a spectrum, it seems like you're sort of dismissing. You don't want to be anywhere on the spectrum.
I think that also the other problem with Al Franken is that there might be more coming out.
Well, that's the thing.
And he seems to
almost suggest that there might be. So that's the thing, is that the worst thing to do is to have it little by little. Oh, you've survived it. Okay, he survived one. She wrote a nice apology letter. Leanne Tweeden forgave him. Then it was one more. And then there are two. Now, like, I mean, again, you can't slow bleed it. If there are three more next weekend, then you're just going to have to go.
And I think strategically for the Democrats, I mean, it's just they won't lose a vote.
You're right.
And they might as well just cut their losses and plow ahead.
I was watching an episode of Sarah Silverman, I Love You, America. Mm-hmm. And Al Franken was on it, and it was nice. And then at the end, there's a kiss. And this came out before that.
Right, and he
kisses her on the mouth.
Well, you know, he's a bit of a mouth kisser.
Awkward.
Which is like always a weird thing.
Yeah, it's weird. When do you stop? When do you stop doing that? I think when...
It's like a really old-fashioned thing, right? Does anyone still do that? I think so. I don't know. Like, I think that, like, that used to happen, but... I don't know.
Ugh. I don't like mouth kissing my wife.
I don't think my wife likes mouth kissing me. Yeah, let's be honest about that.
Who would want to kiss me on the mouth?
No one. No one I know. No one I'd vote for.
I'm
for
kidding,
Senate.
I'm kidding.
All right, let's move on to France.
Ooh,
you weren't kidding. all right, we're moving on to France. So, French President Emmanuel Macron wants to outlaw, quote, gender-based insults. During a speech at the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, he said verbal attacks, he wants them to come with a fine. So you'd be fined for saying, verbally disparaging things to women, which means Pepe Le Pew is going to jail.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
He said, quote,
It's about damn time.
He is raping that cat. All right, the streets should not become hell for the women of France, he said, calling to seal a pact of equality between men and women. He announced plans to make the new rules within weeks. What do you think about, in France, it being a finable offense to
Is that what we're talking about, finable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not, no jail.
No jail, just a fine.
That's better. Better, jail would be hideous.
Especially in a society like the French society, that kind of law will inevitably be used to police only black and brown people in the banlieues, not people that look like Emmanuel Macron.
Right.
There's more that they want to.
I'd say that Nando is a lot smarter than we are.
He's a better traveled.
Yeah.
I always hear the thing that, like, France is super racist. True.
France is super racist. Europe in general
against,
is quite,
like,
racist.
There's a
difference. So the racism that exists in Europe is largely because of a lot of the sort of superficial racism that we've kind of eliminated. Largely, we still have a huge amount of systemic racism and all that stuff, but we've. You can't just go on TV and, like, say the N-word anymore. You know, like, you'd be immediately fired. In Europe, there exists a lot more of that sort of de jure racism. It's much more acceptable still. I think largely because their immigrant communities are much newer. They haven't been fighting these sort of battles for, you know, hundreds of years like we have here. There's a kind of an influx of non-white people into Europe, Western Europe, after World War II. But it's super racist. Like, you know, in the black and brown people within French society, and it's not just French society, it's in Spain and in Germany and all these places. Like, I mean, they have, like, race riots all the time because they're just completely cut out. They're just completely ghettoized and cut out. And like, we know that Barack Obama being elected didn't end racism in America, but that is so unthinkable in Europe for there to be a non-white, head of state or anything like that. It is just beyond anything imaginable. It's super racist.
To this, you know, obviously the danger there is obvious, because what constitutes an insult, right?
There are these weird laws in America about, like, stalking and verbally harassing women on the street, and it varies state to state. And some of them are so strangely worded. They're things like, well, if you're within 300 feet, if you follow someone for 1,000 feet, if you say disparaging things and make a physical threat, they try to put a finer point on it, but it's strange. It just depends on like what is the, I guess, way people typically go about making women feel uncomfortable in any given state.
The issue also is that, you know, in Western Europe, in France and Germany and places, they've outlawed basically like Nazi speech. You know,
yes.
They've outlawed, you know, the denial of the Holocaust is illegal. You can't just go out and, you know, be like wear Nazi paraphernalia on the street. And but that has not prevented the rise, the resurgence of a far right movement in many Western European countries, right? That these, that often, you know, I think the intent of these laws is genuine, but they don't always have they don't always achieve the intended goals.
Is it a waste of time?
I don't know. I mean, like you said, I mean, if this was a criminal, you know, situation,
but
you know,
isn't it criminal to wave the Nazi flag?
I think it is not a. I mean, it's not a useful. It's okay. Inevitably, like these.
I don't mean should it be. I mean, is it like couldn't you get jail time in France?
You could. Yeah.
Yeah, right. But
you know, again, it hasn't. You know, I just find it weird that they would. Sort of try to implement these laws and just without any sort of analysis of whether they are achieving the goals which they want to achieve.
I get it, but I do think there's something to be said for putting out a law that is like, this is what we stand for, this is one step in the process. I totally, we didn't get to a story today in the first hour that was about the gap between the rights that undocumented workers have and the ability to enforce those rights to make sure that they're having them, because it's just like this weird game of chicken where they're like, yeah, you have rights, but you know, I'll just deport you.
Right.
I'm not going to give you your health coverage or like the mask you need to rebuild, you know, after Hurricane Harvey.
Well, I think that that's slightly different in that, you know, you could imagine, you know, how a state could enforce those laws. You know, policing sort of hate speech just strikes me as what'll inevitably happen is that things that we don't consider hate speech will then start be classified as hate speech, especially things that sort of challenge the establishment.
I think
you gotta
illegalize action. You can't criminalize. Excuse me. You can criminalize action. You can't criminalize speech. I don't like the slippery slope argument because it's usually an excuse sort of not to tackle a problem. But
yeah.
But it is here. I mean, you could, and so if this law were a loosely written law about harassment on the street, you know, then maybe you get away with it. You can't follow somebody, you can't threaten them.
And yeah, and that's a different thing, right? I mean, a direct threat to someone is, but like, I don't know.
What do you think of these? What do you think of these other rules that they're putting forward that he mentioned? France is also considering a series of rules that would make it easier for victims to report instances of sexual assault to police.
Yeah, great.
Those measures would include extending to the statute of limitation on rape of a minor to 30 years from the current 20.
I can't see that being a big societal change.
No.
But that seems like
it seems very clear that one of the big problems with sexual assault is the inability for women to come forward and report it to some independent institution outside of whatever, like their employer or, you know, which again is not, the structures of their own employment are not built to help her. They're built to protect themselves,
right? If we've seen any indication that that's true, if anyone doubted that, we have seen the unwillingness to report violent sexual assault. All sexual assault is violent, but even particularly violent sexual assault from people who we would presume had power.
Yeah,
actresses in Hollywood, people, some of them famous. And still, like, so imagine if they felt like there no good comes of this, nothing good comes of this, how powerless people on the streets of the United States or France would feel. So yeah, in general, those laws, that makes sense.
There's another one that says victims could also file initial rape complaints online, and public transit may start offering an on-demand service which would let women get off at any point on their bus routes instead of just designated stops. Food for thought. It might make the buses later in France.
Well, the bus you're driving right now.
Yeah, like the bus I'm driving right now. But, you know, buses on time in France doesn't happen. All right, so we're going to take a break. Don't go away. Give us your thoughts online, especially me making a joke during that segment at hashtag TYT Live. And we'll see you after the break. Welcome back to the film Xanadu, where that music seemed like it came from. All right, we have no time left in the hour, so we're going to get right to this story about the Grammys.
Yes.
The Grammy nominations have come out, and officially this is the first time since 1999 that there are no white men nominated for Album of the Year. The nominees are...
What about Record of the Year? What about Song of the Year?
They're different. They're definitely different.
I don't know that difference. I don't know why that's different.
The difference is that they have three awards to give out. And so they give those. Right. And I always look it up every single year.
I don't understand it.
And immediately forget it.
Because I think, because Record of the Year should be Album of the Year, but Record of the Year is Song of the Year. So I don't know what Song of the Year
I think it's like a production total thing. Yeah. All right, let's go to the nominees. Just that graphic, the one that we have for this. They are Awaken My Love by Childish Gambino, AKA Donald Glover. Melodrama by Lorde. 444. Jay-Z, Damn, Kendrick Lamar, and 24 Karat Magic by Bruno Mars. This hasn't happened since 1999 that there are no white men nominated. If you ask the Washington Post, they say, well, there are white guys in the band Garbage the last time this happened. So it really has never, ever happened. But then again, there's like three white producers on Gambino's album.
I used to love Garbage.
Did you?
Big fan.
So what does this mean? Does anyone care that there's... What, is this an accomplishment?
I don't think this is the Grammys.
Certainly,
I can't imagine anybody caring.
No, people care. People care.
I care about the Grammys.
People get so mad about the Grammys all the time.
No, I know, but forget. I mean, I know what is there. I mean, like, there's no bigger fan of white guy rock music than I.
Right. I just feel like we're not pulling our weight this year.
Right. Well, rock and roll is dead. That's the big story.
Rock and roll is not dead, but it is. The times are changing. That's fine. And also, there's a billion artists. So some years, it's just, you know, it's not like. You know, in 1979, there weren't literally as many bands. There weren't as many, you know, there's so many ways to, I think, right, that were, because it was hard.
I don't know how many bands there were. I don't have that in front of me, the 1979 band count.
Are you leading this hour or are you not leading this hour?
I know. I have a list of people who got snubbed.
Right.
Whites who were snubbed. This is the first time that in 14 years that there are no country artists in the top categories. So that's a big thing. Country also.
They have their own thing.
They have their own CAs.
Awards.
Yeah.
Whatever they are. CAAs. CMAs. They have the ADA bathrooms. Ed Sheeran had the number two album sales this year.
All right.
Lady Gaga.
He's not white. He's pink.
He is pink. He's he was in Game of Thrones. He needs no more laurels. Lady Gaga.
She's a woman.
Katy Perry never won a Grammy.
This is all white people.
All right. So that's really it. All the guys in One Direction except Zayn.
Right.
Didn't get nominated, and they had very successful years this year.
Did John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band, like, do they put out an album this year?
I hope so. Yeah. Actually, I do have that in front of me.
They're not tough enough.
I couldn't name a single. Like, I don't. I just remember the Grammys every year. People get very angry about whoever won, and then no one remembers like who actually won a month later.
Last year, Beyonce was snubbed from this category
for Lemonade,
and the idea that Jay-Z, who is her husband, if you weren't aware. That he might win this year. You know, it's a big thing. And people are wondering what that might seem, you know,
so
the fallout.
Like, in 2008, I think it was, Bruce Springsteen wrote the song, The Wrestler, for The Wrestler, the movie, the Darren Aronofsky movie, the Mickey Rourke, which I love. That was great.
Who's a wrestler?
It was a beautiful, beautiful song. And it didn't get nominated for an Oscar. And they only nominated three songs. Ooh. Like, they're allowed to nominate five, and they didn't. They only nominated three, and it wasn't. You're like, hey, what are you people waiting for? Like, what's the? So I'm not sure that the. And there was some long explanation with the music branch of the Academy and why that was and what they got wrong. But it's hard, you know. There's 1,000 different artists, and it's incredibly competitive.
Yeah, they say that there are no white men, but Lorde was nominated. And if you watch South Park, that is, I think Kyle's dad is Lorde. One of their dads is Lorde, so that doesn't really hold.
Ella Marisa Lani Yelich O'Connor.
Is that Lorde?
That's Lorde.
Lorde's great. I love watching the Grammys because the performances are frequently quite good.
Yeah, especially right. Lately, the thing like up the ante.
Yeah. Speaking of up the ante, we're going to give you our highest production value video of the day right now. It is Christmas season, everyone, even at the White House.
Holiday, say holiday season. I'm insulted.
Well, this is a Christmas video. The it is fine for
Front
Ben Mankiewicz.
Christmas.
For the mishpucha, we're gonna go. Ben Mankiewicz wants you to know that it is holiday season at the White House. Melania Trump was taking people around on a tour of the Christmas and Hanukkah decorations, and Judy Kurtz came around a corner and saw this happening. She's a journalist. Watch this video, please. that's happening.
What's happening to America?
Well,
like, that's crazy.
That happens every year. There's always, like, the first lady has to decorate the home.
Not standing there like a Stepford wife. Man.
Could she have won? Is there any way Melania can win in that situation?
I think Melania is a political prisoner. We should free her immediately. She's clearly, it's a cry for help. That's clearly, I mean, she's from Eastern Europe. They love ballet in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, she's, but, man. Just the,
we need to free her.
The image of what's going on. Like, what's happening in her head during that dance number?
It's I could just imagine the Curb Your Enthusiasm ending music, just like she zooms in on her face, you know.
This piece says it's unclear if the dancers were a surprise for the first lady or a planned affair, but she didn't look particularly overjoyed. She didn't.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's very weird.
She also, it's weird that the first lady has to decorate every, is like in charge of decorating. Right. Of course, she doesn't really do a lot of that stuff, but does that mean that, you know, some say it's sexist that the first lady has to do it, but would Clinton, Bill Clinton, have had to do this? I would have loved to see that.
Well, would he have been kicked out of the White House after all these sexual harassment allegations?
Sorry, everybody. there's a tweet that went out. There are also other decorations on this tour. Someone I followed, what is her name? Let's look at it. The Duet.
That's
scary.
Spooky.
Yeah, that's like a, looks like the Nightmare Before Christmas.
So this is, Jess Dweck points out, showing the clamshell from Ivanka Trump that was terrifying. The design aesthetic of the Trump women is the rotting void inside us.
That's what I'm saying. It's a cry for help. They're clearly saying, like, get us out of here. They're like sending Morse code with their eyelids.
I can't. Know? I just can't get over that video.
How strange everything is.
Yeah. It's weird.
We live in a strange time.
We live in a very strange time.
I don't like any performance just for one person either. I don't like people singing to me.
Right. Mm-hmm. On your birthday?
I dated a girl who said, when she said we didn't get married, but she would like, if we got married, that she had a nice voice. And she was like, you know, she'd sung in college. She was like, oh, I'm going to sing to you at our wedding. And I was like, that's a non-starter. Like
Marilyn Monroe for Jack Kennedy? Saying happy birthday.
Yeah, that would have been, I would have found that incredibly awkward. I wouldn't have known where to look.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I just, the idea that the looks on the faces of the dancers when they turn around and face the camera, of just like this very big smile. Yeah. It's terrifying. She does look like she's one of the kids from The Shining standing there. Like, and in her mind, she's just thinking, you guys see them too, right? This is happening. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this second hour. Fernando, Ben, and join us tomorrow on TYT with Different Faces.
Bye-bye.